Hi, I'm Cynthia Davis, and this is a special edition of Homefront. After the recent State of the Union address, I participated on a conference call with Constitution Party leader Daryl Castle. Daryl and I discussed our reaction to the State of the Union and the Republican response. As a former state representative, I have seen plenty of political speeches and come to this with the goal of helping you see beyond the hype. Daryl served as the past vice chairman of the Constitution Party and the party's vice presidential nominee in 2008. I hope you enjoyed this special edition of Homefront. Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Welcome to our analysis of the State of the Union speech. I'm Cynthia Davis, and I'm being joined by Daryl Castle to provide you with a deeper understanding of what was really said and where our nation is heading. In today's world, where there are very few politicians with real answers, Daryl and I provide you with some sound logic without all the spin and rock-solid answers on how we can be more constitutional. So I would like to talk to you, Daryl, about my first impression, and then I want you to give me your first impression. I got on my sofa last night with my son, and we put the heated throw across our laps, and it was warm and cozy, and he didn't understand why we were watching the State of the Union speech, because this is not a common occurrence in our house. And so my husband had already not only left the room, but left the house, because it was too irritating to listen to the droning and droning of the same old, same old. So I understand that, and I give any spouse permission to leave the house when they hear a president on TV who's being offensive by their philosophy. My son looked over at me, and he said, "Mom, are we for Barry or against Barry?" And I said to him, "Son, what made you decide to call him Barry?" And he said, "I learned about that in third grade. That's when he played basketball." And I said, "Well, do you want him to go back to being Barry?" And he said, "Well, Barry rhymes better with the song they taught us." So my question is, we did an amazing job of watching well-groomed people. We watched not only the Democrat president, but then the Republican rebuttal. They did a great job of looking good and speaking smoothly and polished. If I were a speech teacher, I would have given them both high remarks because they did a great job of presenting a speech. The problem is it was flawed in the content area. So I couldn't help but listen to it and hear red flags pop up from time to time, things that disturbed me because they weren't right. So let me ask you, Daryl, what was your impression of the overall content of the speech, and were there any red flags that got your blood boiling?
Well, first of all, Cynthia, I agree with you about one thing. I thought he did a good job of presentation. He did a good job of looking presidential. And he spoke to the base of the Democratic Party, which I think was his intent. It was one of the better speeches that he's given during his time in office, I thought, in that regard. But the thing about the content, the philosophy of the speech seems to be the government can do anything. It can solve any problem, and it will solve any problem. And I know what's best for you. The government knows what's best for you. And if Congress will not cooperate with me in doing what's best for you, I will do it on my own. That seems to be the philosophy. There's no mention of the restraint of law or the fact that you may want something or you may want to do something as president that is not lawful and therefore cannot be done. You are restrained by nothing as president. If Congress will not obey me, I will simply act on my own. That is his philosophy. coupled with the theory that government is all-powerful and can solve any problem. It can solve problems of the climate. It can solve problems of the economy. It can solve social problems like racial issues. It can solve problems of women not making as much as men, as the president worded it, children of color not doing as well in school. The government can solve all these problems, and it will through the introduction of new programs. And if Congress will not approve these, then the president will act on his own. That is the overarching theme of the speech, with a few other foreign policy issues and so forth.
He had a phrase from early on in the speech. He said, "We've had a rancorous debate over the size of government." And my response to that is it wasn't rancorous enough. He used that to explain that the 16-day government shutdown cost our government billions of dollars. What he was trying to do is punish, shame, and humiliate anybody who shut down the government so they don't dare try that one again. Now, I have a problem with him using his speech to belittle those who opposed him. If we had had a true rancorous debate, the government might have had some real reforms. As a result, we got nothing. And I guess I don't blame him for bringing out that the government shutdown was a failure, because it truly was. The Republicans failed to stand strong. As a parent, what would happen to your children if you say, if you go outside the line, I'm going to punish you, and then there's no punishment? In fact, those government workers were rewarded in the end because they got a 16-day vacation on top of their regular vacation. They got paid for it. We got no productivity out of it. In the real world, I own my own business. If I shut my business down for 16 days, I don't get customers. That means I don't have sales. That means there's an impact. He is acting like government needs to support everybody. And you're right. What he's saying is that the 16-day shutdown was a flop, a failure. And I wonder if you would comment about how his remarks struck you.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I thought he chided Congress from time to time about differences that they've had. But overall, I thought he was respectful of Congress in general. As far as the government shutdown goes, it is interesting that it cost billions of dollars to shut down the government. I wonder which cost more, shutting it down or keeping it open. You know, we had an old building here in Memphis one time that the study showed that it would cost $500,000 a year to shut it down and over $1 million to keep it open, so they shut it down. But it's interesting how that works. But you're right, the shutdown came for the American people. No good came of it. I mean, the president was, to use a word from his own party, mean-spirited about it, and that he punished the American people by trying to take away things that might be enjoyable to them, like parks and things of that nature that he decided on his own authority to close. And you know, on his own authority is how he likes to do things. If he doesn't get his way, he just does what he wants to do without any restraint whatsoever. So in the long run, the shutdown of the government was pointless and meaningless because nothing came of it. We end up passing a budget with even more money in it. So what was the point?
Darryl, to disagree with you slightly, you said he didn't disparage Congress, but his exact words were, those who supported the shutdown didn't do right by the American people. So that really was a jab, and we ought not let him get away with that, because while it was shut down, he was the one paying federal employees to erect barricades to open monuments like the World War II veteran and to block off access to our parks where there was zero cost to the taxpayer for people actually seeing the park. So he was punitive, and that was a disparaging remark when he said that we didn't do right by the American people. I think he needed to point the finger at himself there and say he didn't do right by the American people by trying to jab us when we already were in a crisis. But I'd like to talk to you about minimum wage, because that was the comment that drove my husband not only out of the room but out of the house. So he puts on the screen a picture of this boy with buttons in his ears, and I'm not disparaging that, but he's trying to stereotype what people look like who are on minimum wage. And that's a problem right there, because he can't make an assumption that's what they all look like. As he went on and on, he had the employer stand up and receive applause, because this employer has decided he's going to pay his employees $10.10 an hour. Furthermore, he, as the chief executive, is going to make sure that our government contractors all have to pay $10.10 an hour. I don't know where he got that. But what's most idiotic about the logic behind this is he's not explaining where is that $10.10 an hour coming from, because I guarantee you it comes from two places. Number one, it's either going to be inflationary, and if he wants to play that game, he can make $10.10 an hour come out to the equivalent of $2 an hour currently. $10.10 is meaningless until he stops printing the money randomly in large excesses. We're not guaranteed we're going to see anything come of that $10.10. It ruins the value of $10.10. And then on top of it, he was talking about the strength of our work ethic without realizing when you give people random raises for no apparent reason without their work ethic making it happen. And by the way, people can get paid $10.10 an hour right now. Guess what? Without a law, there are plenty of people making $10.10 an hour and more. How do they make the $10.10 and more? Well, they work hard, they start going up the ladder, and there's nothing more devastating to the youth in our country than raising the minimum wage. So what was your opinion of that?
Well, you said it pretty well. I mean, I think his minimum wage proposal was part of his income disparity theme, that things are getting worse for certain people. And he's in a bit of a quandary there, because income disparity has gotten worse during his administration, and so he has to find someone to blame that on. But I think on the merits, the minimum wage will have, it's the wrong message at the wrong time. It'll have the opposite effect than what he seems to think, because it'll increase unemployment, and it will devastate youth unemployment. Anybody who wants to increase the minimum wage nationally across the country, I mean, for him, I suppose he thinks he can just tell the Federal Reserve to print more money and they can pay for it. But for those of us out here in the civilian world, increasing the minimum wage simply drives the cost of hiring low-wage workers higher. They're unemployed to a large extent because it's too expensive to hire them. So there are going to be more people unemployed and more people on the federal unemployment rolls, which probably wouldn't bother him at all, because his chosen ones now make $10.10 an hour. You know, but as you pointed out, why $10.10? Why not $20 an hour? If it's a good thing, why not $100? If it makes no difference, why is $10.10 the number that he chose? Why not, why not just give us all the money? It's all just ridiculous, and it flies in the face of economic laws that he seems to have no conception of.
What he was asking that employer to do, and all the employers in this country, he was saying, I'm asking all of you just to be nice and give your employees more money. Will you just do that? Well, let's think about this, because I'm an employer also. I own my own business also. So the one question he didn't answer is, where is that money coming from? Well, is he asking all employers in America to forego their own paycheck? If that's the way he wants it to be, why didn't he lead by example? This is the irony and the point that we need to all look at. His exact words were, I'm going to lead by example, and I'm going to make sure that the federal government gives everybody $10.10 an hour minimum if they're going to get a contract working for the government. No, that's not leading by example, Mr. Obama. That is spending more of somebody else's money. Now, leading by example would look like this. He would say, I am going to lead by example. So I'm going to take my vacation fund, and I don't know how many millions of dollars we're up to yet, But what if he had said, I'm going to start paying for my own vacations with my own money, and I'm going to use all those millions of dollars we would have spent to fund giving more money to the federal workers? How about that? Or what if he'd done the same for Congress? What if he'd said, I'm asking Congress to cut a little chunk out of your paychecks. Why don't we cut them in half? Congress, be noble. Every one of you who wants the minimum wage to be raised, you lead by example. You start off by saying, let's be the first ones. We're going to cut our paycheck in half and put the remainder into a slush fund that goes to help other people get more money per hour. How about that idea, Daryl?
Well, it's, you know, he obviously Congress and the president and so forth are excused from many of the things that we are required to face. And when we deal with our own employees, and whether you run a business or not, I mean, it's your money now that you're talking about. And, of course, he's never personally had to make a payroll. He's never had to agonize over where the money to make that payroll comes from. It just seems totally incomprehensible to him that a lot of people out there that run businesses could be just barely making it and really couldn't afford the difference. So they would have no choice except to lay people off. And what would that accomplish? Yes, there are many things that could be applied to both Congress and the president, but, you know, they're too busy exempting themselves from Obamacare and things like that to be concerned about what we like it. As far as his vacations go, you know, perhaps he could consider spending some time in the White House doing some real work rather than planning his next multi-million dollar trip.
There was a moment in the speech when he talked about Michelle Obama so she would have a chance to stand up and everybody could see how pretty her dress was, and I think that's nice. But it would have been more fair and honest if he'd said, now I'd like you to all give a hand to my wife, Michelle Obama, let everybody clap and have her sit down. But no, he didn't just stop there. What he said was, Michelle's Let's Move partnership has reduced childhood obesity. Now, it's true Michelle looked very manicured last night, but I'm not aware of any government program that's reduced childhood obesity, nor had he provided any statistics to back up his claim. The facts are that children are getting fatter all the time because a lot of them are not doing vigorous sports, or they're sitting home with video games. They're eating junk food. Most of that junk food that children on welfare are eating was paid for by the taxpayers. You've got people who go out and choose to buy potato chips and soda, popcorn, candy. You can buy all of that with food stamps, but they're not actually making the children healthier. If we wanted an initiative to reduce childhood obesity, you would think at the bare minimum we could start there with, let's curtail some of the food that has zero nutritional value, that only is going to add calories and obesity. And on top of all that, have you seen children thinning down in this country since Michelle Obama started her Let's Move program? Tell me what you've seen so far.
Well, to be honest about it, I'm 65 years old, and I spend very little time looking at children to determine whether they're fat or not. So I really don't know. That's a very difficult question to answer. I can't say whether Mrs. Obama's program has helped or it hasn't helped. I know obesity is a problem, and like I said earlier, the government can fix any problem, so it's got to be involved in it.
Well, obviously, he wasn't confident enough in his own claim to give us any statistics to back it up. It was just a claim. It was a statement. And everybody had good reason now to stand up and applaud the person responsible for reducing childhood obesity in America. Another comment I'd like to make is, there was a point during the speech when Barack Obama talked about promoting marriage equality. And in the past, you would guess that people would, of course, you know, marriage equality doesn't mean marriage equality. It's a euphemism meaning homosexual behavior, calling it marriage, which is fraudulent. Marriage is between a man and a woman. And so by our definition of what is marriage, we already have marriage equality, unless he's talking about getting rid of some of the tax breaks that are given to people who are not married. I don't think he was talking about that. Nevertheless, there was silence after that word, and maybe he was expecting it to bring applause again. I don't know, but it was quiet, dead quiet.
Hi, friends. Do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end, so go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch.
Next, I want to talk to you about veterans. You and I and everybody in America pretty much love veterans. Nobody would dare say anything against them. But what they said during the speech, if you'll notice, that the longest applause went to the veteran who got injured. More applause went to him than to Barack Obama for anything Barack Obama said. And I think that's honorable and noble that we took a moment to applaud somebody who'd been injured. I think that's sweet. And people today are saying that is the most memorable part of the entire speech. Now, if that's the most memorable part, what does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that he wanted to end well. He brought out this wounded Army Ranger with 10 different tours in Afghanistan, which is really incredible that anybody would be sent over there 10 times, but this man was. And it was a way of ending his speech on a powerful note. He kept going back to the military time and again to get an applause line. I'm sure that someone stuck those lines in there to make sure there was time to for the Congress to stand up and applaud. When you think the military, they have to do that. So, there are so many things that have been done with these people. And I will say that Barack Obama did not invade Afghanistan and he did not invade Iraq. And he has done what he said he did. He has removed troops from Iraq and is now doing it from Afghanistan, although he's planning to leave some there after 2014, as long as Mr. Karzai agrees to do that. But nevertheless, it's been a long, difficult struggle for the military. And it is only now that he seems to be trying to honor them by paying them the benefits that they've been promised and giving them the medical benefits that they deserve and have been promised and so forth. And, you know, sometimes I observe him around military people when he's not being watched, or at least he doesn't think he's being watched. It's small gestures that he does with the Marine Guards and things like that. They really tell me how he feels about them. But it was convenient at this time, and it was a nice gesture, as you say, to bring that man to the speech, and a good way to end the speech on a very powerful note.
Unfortunately, this president has done more to demoralize the military than any president in my lifetime. He's been putting women in combat. We're seeing women coming home in body bags and with missing limbs. He's been trying to shut down the chaplains. He's been ordering them to perform marriages to people who are morally decadent. I mean, this is not what chaplains do. This is not what they're trained to do. And so for him to try and advertise himself as being some great supporter of the military when we know what's going on, and if Congress would allow him, he would cut their budget more. Nevertheless, he mentioned he's pulling people out of Afghanistan and Iraq, but he did not mention what he's doing about Libya, Syria, Egypt, how he's helping the Muslim Brotherhood. What gives with that?
Well, he did mention that even though he was winding down the war in Afghanistan, he was going to continue to pursue terrorists around the world wherever he saw them as a threat to the United States. He specifically mentioned Al-Qaeda, but he didn't mention that we support Al-Qaeda when it's convenient for us to do so, like in Syria, for example. But in Iraq, we oppose Al-Qaeda. We arm one group. They have a common border. It's very easy for the Al-Qaeda rebel factions in Syria to deliver weapons that they got from America across the border to the Al-Qaeda fighters in Iraq to fight against the people that we're supplying there. So it's all just madness, and it really shows that the term come home and mind your own business is very appropriate in a place like the Middle East. You know, you start out trying to do something good, and it has unintended bad consequences. It happens over and over again as revolution now spreads across the Middle East as these governments are crumbling.
And I'm happy for the military gentleman who received all the honor, but what about all the other people? Where's their mention? I have a very close friend whose son was killed in Afghanistan. Why didn't she get mentioned? How did they single out one person to manipulate sympathies and leave out the atrocities that happened to the other people? What about Benghazi? If he had really wanted to make a memorable speech, let me coach Barack Obama for a minute. This is what you needed to say. I've had a talk with Hillary Clinton, and she said that she's sorry she put through the order to stand down, and we're trying to make it up to those men who were killed and their families. I mean, what else would have made him more honorable than if he'd answered the questions that Americans are asking and apologized for places where he made blunders and tried to make it right by us? He has done wrong by us. People have tried to get the truth, and he's been as obstructionistic as possible. What about Benghazi?
Well, these are things, you know, you ask too much of a president in a campaign speech to do that sort of thing. This was a speech designed to appease his base and to bring them back together and make them believe in him and his positions for this 2014 election cycle. The Democrats are upset. There's rumbling in the ranks. They're all nervous about Obamacare. And if you noticed in the speech, he was proud of Obamacare. He's let them know quite well that it's working quite well. He's proud of it. It's not something he's ashamed of. So, you know, I have a young man that works for me here in my law office whose brother was killed in Iraq. You know, it's touched families across America, but this man that they had there to honor was simply symbolic of all those out there who have been wounded and butchered in these stupid, useless wars for the last 23 years. Why he didn't mention Benghazi? Because he's guilty of sin on Benghazi. He was personally briefed on Benghazi. He knows that as well as you and I do, and Hillary Clinton was too, so, you know, he might be confessing to a crime if he did something like that. I mean, it's an impeachable offense.
One more comment Barack Obama made that stood out to me. He said, climate change is a fact. Okay, now, you listen to his words, and notice he did not say global warming is a fact, because he knows this is January, and they had a backdrop of the Capitol with snow coming down. It looked very beautiful and set a great tone. But here's the point. Climate change is a fact. You know why? Because we have weather. As long as we have weather, we're going to see weather change. When weather changes, that's called climate change. So what he really was saying is we need to put more money into programs that will punish people that emit carbon dioxide. When you read between the lines, you get the picture of what he's saying. Can you respond to his harping on the same message of we need bigger government to control carbon?
Well, I thought his climate change comment was, I mean, I knew he was going to make one, but still, it was laughable. In fact, I did laugh when I heard it, as you pointed out, with the snow in Washington and one of the coldest winters on record, and the Arctic ice patterns higher than they've ever been in history as far as we know. But yes, he did say that climate change, the debate is over, he said, it's a fact. And as you point out, what he's really saying is the laws of economics do not matter, not to me, but I'll tell you something about the laws of economics. No person, no country, no people, no society, no civilization can spend more than it takes in forever. Sooner or later, somebody is going to have to pay the piper, and the piper is lining up in America right now for his money. And this country, there's a day of reckoning coming out there, and very soon, you know, he can't simply wish away the laws of economics. Sooner or later, these debts are going to have to be paid.
Well, I want to end with my favorite topic of the whole speech, and he kept it brief, but there's something that, Daryl, you and I and Barack Obama, all three of us agree on. You want to guess what that is? We all agree that the immigration system is broken.
Well, you're absolutely right. We do agree that it's broken and it needs to be fixed.
What's interesting is Obama admitted the immigration system is broken. Thank you. You admitted it. What we can't agree on is how to fix it. So we do have a problem. He claimed that the immigration reform will grow our economy. Now, let me read between the lines for you. What he's saying is immigration reform will bring in a lot more workers who are then all going to get big paychecks, because if you combine immigration reform with a higher minimum wage, now you really have problems. What he means by immigration reform is take people who cheated our laws to get here illegally and make them all citizens, and that will obviously stop more of them coming. No. It will make more of them want to come because now it's so much easier. When you fill the workforce with people who are making more money, and it's supply and demand. It's simple supply and demand. How can wages go up when the availability of workers goes up?
Well, you're right. I mean, we do agree that the immigration laws need to be fixed, but his solution, as you say, is amnesty for those who are here now and complete open borders, and at the same time an increase in the minimum wage. It's a recipe for disaster, but the Republicans are just as guilty as he is. In fact, they want it. The Republican leaders, I mean, the lady who gave the Republican response, Kathy McMorris Rogers, a real sweet lady from Washington, I mean, she essentially endorsed amnesty in her Republican follow-up. So it seems like something that's going to happen because the Republican leadership is certainly solidly in favor of it, but whether they can get it by the rank and file is another issue. It was an interesting point in his speech, you're right, because most of us out there who feel the way that we do probably were thinking the same thing. Yeah, you're right, the immigration laws are broken and need to be fixed, but our solutions are completely different.
Our solutions are completely different. We're all looking at a problem, which is a porous border, people coming here randomly. Some of them are good and some of them are not good. Some of them are people we would not want in our country. And if we had rules and respected the rules and enforced the rules, then they wouldn't be here at all. When you combine the murder rate and the domestic violence rate and all the other places where we're spending our money on things that are not even for citizens, there's something wrong. I don't know that it can be fixed, my prediction, and you can give me yours, but I predict that the Democrats will win this battle because they want to turn it more into a loose structure. All you need is a minority of Republicans to go along with that, and suddenly you've got a majority supporting it. What will it do to our economy? That story has yet to be told. We have a country that was designed for moral and decent people. It is wholly unfit for any others, and if we bring people here who don't have the moral standards, cannot assimilate, and don't share our values, that is a recipe for more hardship and more difficulty for all of us and our way of life. So I did hear Kathy Rogers' response, and what I got from it is this is a very nice lady, very well-groomed, sitting on a sofa, didn't wear a suit, but trying to be casual. When you don't wear a suit, you're trying to say, we're going to pretend we're just home. And she, both announcers before her speech and after, mentioned that she has three children. She mentioned that she wasn't married when she came to Washington, and now she is. I'm happy for her. So what was the meat? Where was the content part of her speech? Well, a lot of these politicians want to win a personality contest. Both Kathy and Barack were trying to win who is the most likable. The commentators are looking at them and saying, which one makes us feel good? This is where the American brain is turned to mush, because we ought never be satisfied with who's going to make us feel good. We need content, we need substance, but more importantly, we need to adhere to our founding documents. Where was the mention of the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence or anything that this country was based on last night from either of them?
Well, as Nancy Pelosi would say, you've got to be kidding. I mean, the president's entire philosophy is it doesn't matter. He can do whatever he wants. It's a clear violation of Article 1, Section 1, which grants all legislative power to the Congress. We'll see if Congress has enough guts to call him on it. I doubt if they do. But yes, it's a monarchical type of thing. We have a very government-centric economy now. We have a very government-centered world that we live in. And this president believes that he is the government. And the government is the country, and it is a very powerful notion. It is a monarch type of thing, and the founding fathers were very wary of that. They did things to prevent this president from becoming a monarch. For example, in Article 2, Section 4, the founders put in the clause that gave Congress the right to impeach the president for high crimes and misdemeanors, defined in their day as misdeeds, violating the Constitution with impunity, continually threatening them with doing so would seem to me to be a misdeed, but that is the way it goes now. He did look presidential. Ms. Rogers, when she gave her rebuttal, she looked like a nice lady. I assume she was chosen because she's in a leadership position in the House, number one. But number two, she can show the Republicans are diverse too. You know, they have smart women in their ranks and their mothers and that sort of thing, as you say. And it's all just for show. Let me just tell one last story, and that is that when Thomas Jefferson was elected president, he thought that it would be wrong for him to go to Congress and make a grand speech. He thought that reminded him too much of what a British monarch would have done. So he wrote out a speech on a piece of paper and sent it over to the Congress and had a clerk read it out loud to them. And he made it intentionally vague so that it did not give the appearance of a royal edict. That tradition was carried on all the way up to Woodrow Wilson, the patrician chairman of the University of Princeton University, decided that he needed to be more like a monarch and come out and make a speech. It's been done that way ever since. This whole grand thing is so designed to make us see them as what they perceive themselves to be. But it's time we rein them in a little bit, in my opinion.
Daryl, I'd like to thank you for joining me. If I were going to sum up Kathy's comments last night, I would say it was a missed opportunity because she could have said so much more. Where was her bravery? Where was her courage to call out people when they're wrong? If somebody is taking the country down the wrong path on a long march towards socialism, why would we not stand up and vigorously oppose that? Where was the fire to say, you know what, he's doing it wrong, it's not going to help us, we need to be better than this, we are Americans, can we not see what the Constitution laid out for our rules and then stick within those parameters? We are the conscience for our country. You can't stand back and just say, everybody is so good. No, there are some things that are good and there's some that are bad. And governing correctly means you point out when they've gone bad and you stand by those who are good. And there is a right way and a wrong way to run this country. Together, we can raise the consciousness and create some awareness of where we need to go. And so, thank you. You can't fix a crummy speech by throwing on a quick God bless America. That's the last topper at the end. And now, you know, those who know Barack Obama know that he probably told his Muslim friends, by God, he means Allah, so they just cut him some slack there. But the truth is, it's not going to help you to sling some reference to God on your speech. And both of them did this without the meat. The Congress is responsible for funding abortions. Why would Kathy not have stood strong and said, while this man in the White House thinks it's okay to kill innocent people who've never had a trial, I stand against that. Where was the opportunity to explain what is right and wrong economically even? How he is taking us financially off the edge of the cliff, and these policies are causing more destruction. So I don't know what the answer is for the Republicans and Democrats. It kind of felt like watching a wrestling match, and the goal was for them both to come out looking very muscular at the end. Well, if that's your goal, fine. But meanwhile, the country's going in the trash if we can't get better leadership.
Well, you can't have a Republican leadership. The president comes out and says, look, you know, without saying it like Bill Clinton, I feel your pain and I'm going to help you. I know what's wrong and I'm going to fix it. You can't have the Republicans are not going to come out and say, no, this whole system is flawed. I mean, they just simply don't have the courage to do that. And like you said, they're not going to come out and say, this is taking us toward a system of government, socialism that has failed worldwide. This entire massive global system right now, this failing worldwide economy that we're in, backed by trillions and trillions of dollars of debt that's on the verge of collapse, is all caused because it's been a massive socialist experiment over the last 100 years, and that experiment is reaching the point of failure now. They don't have the courage to do that because I don't think they believe it themselves.
Well, I would like to close with a word to the voters and to the citizens in America who might be sitting here watching this. Don't accept this. It's our country. We have this system today with this president and this Congress because we elected those people to go to Washington, D.C. If they're making bad decisions, it still is up to us to correct the record. And we can do that by becoming informed, by supporting the good guys, and by learning the difference between what's a slick speech and what's constitutional. Don't let them dupe you. Do what's right. You'll feel good about it, and so will we. The country can self-correct. We are designed to self-correct. All it takes is people who are brave and bold and stand up. We have to tear the veil down, take off the sheet, open up the can, look inside, and say, that's not resonating. You know what? The economy is worse than ever. The morality is worse than ever. The country is not flourishing. Let's be a little realistic. Maybe it's time for an intervention. Let's talk about what it's going to take. And it's as simple as going back to being constitutional again and holding to a standard. Because, folks, that's the only standard we have. What do you say, Daryl?
Well, I agree. That's the only standard we have, and that is what we should go back to. It's so simple. I don't think we're going to get there without a great deal of pain. I think the economy is going to teach us some real lessons coming up very soon. I think the government is very well prepared for when that happens. I think they expect it, and they're going to be ready, the people who run the government, that is. That's what I mean by they. But yes, the Constitution is the answer. It is the guidebook to this country, and it's what we should be following. Time will tell how it comes out. But in closing, I mean, there are some things about this speech that were good. I thought much of his foreign policy section was very good. He wants to end involvement in long, protracted, never-ending wars, that sort of thing. I say amen to that. I'm with him on that. But we'll see how it all comes out. They don't mention the Constitution because they don't believe in it. Republicans want the status quo, too. They cannot get up there and say government is too big. It's got to be reined back. The Constitution has to be followed because that would limit their power just like it limits his power. It's a simple thing, really. They don't want the status quo to change. They just want it to keep moving inevitably forward toward more and more government power.
Well, thank you, Daryl, for joining us today. We're going to stay strong. We're going to stay bold. We're going to stay courageous. And we're going to keep pointing out the truth to you. Thank you for joining us. And I hope that you'll join us again when we give you more truth and honesty and another dose of reality. Thank you.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.